Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Welcome.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Brand new year, brand new set of films.
New me.
New you. New yeah. You, new me. Yeah. Have you got any New Year's resolutions?
My New Year's resolution is to drink as much as with Nail in this film.
With Nail? Oh, yes, because today's film is one that I've chosen, one of my favourite films. The British comedy classic from 1987, With Nail and I.
Yes.
Which I've probably watched, I don't know, possibly 50 times.
50.
I reckon I'm not even exaggerating when I say that, although I will say that a lot of them were when I was younger and I drank alongside them. And so I don't really remember all 50 times.
Okay.
But yeah, so on your New Year's resolution, wanting to drink as much as with now, there is actually, have you ever heard about this? There's like a drinking contest that they do alongside this film. A lot of students traditionally.
Yeah, okay.
They watch the film and they try and match the drinks whilst watching the film, which is an obscene amount of alcohol.
There's a lot of alcohol in it. So do you mean they'll match when they have a cider, they'll have a cider, they'll have a wine when they have a wine?
So there's one scene when they go into the pub at the beginning and they say, I'll have 2 pints of cider with ice. And I think they get spirits or something as well.
Yeah.
And they'll drink those. And then they drink wine when they drink wine. And
they'd be bladdered.
They'd be comatose, probably.
Yes.
And some even drink lighter fluid. Well, not actually lighter fluid. They usually use a substitute like vinegar or something.
Oh, okay.
Which I believe is what they used in the film.
Is vinegar alcoholic?
No, it's not alcoholic. Okay. But they used it to get like an actual reaction from him. So that reaction you see in the film when he drinks the lighter fluid.
Yeah.
Anyway, for those that haven't seen the film, I'll start with a little bit of a synopsis and the setting of it. So it's about two out-of-work actors, With Nail and I, played by Richard E. Grant and Paul McCann, who are joined together in some miserable point in their life in a damp flat in Camden. And in a bid to kind of escape this reality, they decide they need to go on holiday. With Nail has an idea, so they go and visit With Nail's uncle, who is
very extravagant.
Yeah, extravagant. That's a good word, yeah. He's very extravagant and camp. And as I says himself, a raving homosexual.
Yes.
Anyway, they manage to convince him, or With Nail manages to convince him, although we don't see this, because this comes into it later on, doesn't it? It manages to convince him to give him the key to his house in the country, and so begins their little holiday.
Yeah, little city getaway. Well, get away from the sea.
Up to Penrith in Cumbria.
Yeah.
So what I like about the start of this film is it's definitely a comedy. I heard somebody describe it as a slacker comedy, which to me is like a very specific kind of American style comedy. When I hear slacker comedy.
Slacker comedy. I've not heard that term before.
Like Clarks and stuff. Yeah. I would call it a tragic comedy, if anything.
It's very tragic. You really do feel for the characters.
That's what's brilliant about it. It starts off very serious. To begin with, you know, you've got, I think it's White Shade of Pale, isn't it, playing with this saxophone, and you see he leaves the flat and he goes down to this cafe, and it's this real greasy cafe where there's just egg dripping out of sandwiches and working class people just looking fed up of life, and he's fed up of life.
Yeah.
And so you don't know what you're in for. You're in for just this drama, really. Mm-hmm. And then I start speaking to you in his...
He's got this internal dialogue and he's constantly paranoid. That's what I picked up on, his constant state of paranoia.
Neurotic. Yeah.
It catches you very quickly, I find.
Yeah, that's when it starts to get slightly more comedy-like, when he's, I've got to do something about my life, I've got to change With Nail, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. So it establishes the protagonist, I. You don't actually hear his name in the film, do you?
No, he's even credited as I, but with a Google search, apparently his name's Marlwood.
Yeah, Marlwood.
I don't know what we will refer to him as. We just refer to him as I. I thought that I.
I thought.
It might get a little complicated, but we'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah.
What's the actor's name again?
Paul McGann.
I might just say Paul. Makes it easier.
Whatever makes it easier for you.
Yeah, I'm very simple.
You are very simple.
Thank you for agreeing.
But, you know, it's a new year. It's a new you. You do whatever you want to do for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And carry on drinking by all means, you know. Just you. I don't know if we're supposed to be drinking in here, but, you know, you've drank, what, about a bottle of wine now?
Yeah, I know. Well, you've been nattering away. I've got for a few bottles of wine.
Have I been talking that long? It feels endless. So anyway, with Niall and I go on holiday, they drive up the motorway in this what begins as a very joyous kind of journey. They're both drunk and they're kind of happy. But then by the time they get to Penrith, the weather's horrendous. Withnail's got a headache and they turn up at this falling down country house, not at all what they expected. Mm-hmm. They, to quote the film, they've gone on holiday by mistake. They get there, there's no firewood, it's cold, it's wet, there's no food. All these things they need to sort out. Actually, I think what's quite good about the film and why it is so well liked is it's very relatable.
Yeah, they're completely, hopelessly dependent, but neither of them's really very good at anything.
Yeah.
Really. Withnail is kind of worms his way out of situation. He's a bit of a liar, a bit of a manipulator.
Coward.
Yeah, he's a coward. And I, Paul McGann, is...
What, are you, you're Paul McGann?
I am Paul McGann, guest starring on the podcast. I is very much a paranoid, neurotic...
You are, yeah.
Yeah. It's the wine.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating seeing this dependency and then them come out of the norm, which is already chaos,
yeah,
to something even more chaotic. They have to collect firewood. Withnail sort of disappears outside for a bit, comes back in with like a single damp stick.
Yeah.
He can't offer anything else. They're just completely useless.
So then they start breaking up furniture and they're like, how long is this furniture going to last? And then there's this whole thing where they're trying to get food. They finally go knock on a farm and the farmer's mother or wife, I don't know, answers, and you need to see the farmer, he's up in the field, you can't miss him, his legs bound in polythene. And so then they manage to get a chicken and some firewood.
So they manage to bargain to get a chicken and some firewood, and then when the farmer turns up, it's revealed that the chicken's still alive, which I found was a funny twist.
So then they have to find a way to kill a chicken. And not only kill a chicken, but cook a chicken. And
de-pluck it.
Yeah.
There's a very comedic sort of shot in that after they get it. Withnail's like, take off the legs. He's like, no, watch this. I takes him through to the furnace, opens up the oven, and just sits it over a brick legs. That was quite entertaining.
But I think what it is about the characters is that most of us in life, and obviously not all, some people are very self-sufficient, but most of us in life, if we were in that situation... Mm-hmm. You know, we'd be trying to figure things out in a way that wasn't really... We wouldn't find an easy solution to things,
no.
I don't think. That is certainly what I felt watching it over the years, is that I could relate to the characters. They're hopeless. I can relate to that hopelessness.
Just completely hopeless. Yeah. Good at nothing.
Yeah.
And it's easy to relate to.
And, you know, and I used to be an actor, more often an out-of-work actor, so I could relate to that kind of side of things as well. But the hopelessness is kind of heartwarming. Then... they go to the pub when they're in the country. They go to the pub one night and they're still after a bit of food. They've been trying to get fish by shooting fish in the water. It's insane. And then they go to the pub and they ask if there's anywhere they can get food. Go on, you were going to say.
I was just going to say before that they had been to the pub and met a poacher who fishes out eels, and after that gives them the cold shoulder. They leave and then I think they go hunting for the fish and then they return to the pub again without food, hopeless.
And then in the middle of the night... there's all of a sudden this knocking at the door. Somebody's trying to get in.
Yeah.
And they are absolutely petrified. And this is another one of these moments that's very relatable because most people would be terrified if they're in a country house.
They hear the smash in a glass.
In the middle of nowhere, they hear the smash in a glass.
Yeah.
And they're convinced that it's the poacher who they've not made friends with coming round to...
butcher them asking for a chicken. pheasant.
Yeah. Cute, funny scene where Withnail is trying to get I to go and offer himself to the poacher as Dewey wants.
After running into his room and getting into his bed. snuggling up with him. It's Dewey wants.
That's an interesting point about getting in his bed and snuggling up with him. I think we'll come back to that because I think their relationship is an interesting one, isn't
it? Yes, very.
But anyway, it turns out that the person at the door is not the poacher and is in fact Uncle Monty.
Who is played by, I'm not sure the actor's name, but the guy that plays Harry Potter's sort of...
uncle.
Is it Richard Griffiths?
Richard Griffiths.
That was a surprise. He was very good as that character, that sort of...
Do you know, I believe he was actually younger than the other two.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, interesting fact. Also, what I will say about Uncle Monty is he was based on an experience that Bruce Robinson, the writer and director of the film, had had when he was filming Romeo and Juliet, the Fellini film Romeo and Juliet. I believe he was playing Mercutio. And Fellini was this overly...
Flamboyant.
who was kind of after Bruce Robinson. Okay. So there's a line in the film when he says, Richard E. Grant's reading from the newspaper, actor gets plum roll in Italian film, and he goes, I know what for, £2.10 a tit and a fiver for his arse. And I thought, I bet that's Bruce Robinson's experience, you know. So Uncle Monty is this lecherous homosexual who's basically come to the country because he's clearly attracted to me.
Yeah, he was attracted to Lewis, so he paid him a visit.
So he's attracted to I, and then you have...
He's very predatory as well, isn't he?
He sort is.
Of infringing on personal space.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
And what is quite good about the actors in that bit, I thought Paul McGann is very empathic in his role. You know, he's not get off.
Yeah, no.
He's just this Englishman trying his best to politely ward him off.
Yeah, but by doing it, he's accidentally making a lot of eye contact, trying to like be friendly with him, which is giving him the hint that, oh, okay, he's interested. There's something here.
Doesn't Wid now say something like, well, stop,
yeah, stop
looking
fluttering your eyes at him.
It's like, I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. He can't help himself, but being nice.
And this culminates in a nighttime game of poker where Withnail and his uncle are talking to each other in Latin and I is getting increasingly paranoid about what the hell they're talking about. And then Withnail gets very drunk and Monty's like, we must get him to bed.
Yeah. So I think Withnail, because I has been getting very uncomfortable with Monty and he's been making attempts at him, telling him, oh, come and cook with me while Withnail goes out and... collects wood and all these different things, and he's getting behind him, almost his arms around his waist type of thing, trying to show him how to cut veg.
He says the classic line, we must transfer your talents to the meat.
Yes. So there's all this sort of going on, and because of that, I basically says to Withnail, like, you're sleeping on the sofa tonight, I'm sleeping in the room with a lock, and then Monty can sleep in the other bedroom. Withnail gets too drunk, gets put to bed, insists on going to the bed with the lock, and I is too polite to give the reason why he must sleep in the room with the lock. So he's sort of in and out the room trying to convince a drunk Withnail to come and sleep on the sofa. Uncle Monty's like, oh, no, he's far too drunk for that boy. You can sleep with me.
Boy, yeah, that's a good boy. Yeah. So anyway, I manages to go, no, I'm really tired. I must go to sleep. He's like, but not too tired. Eh?
Yeah.
No, I'm really... So he goes to sleep and then the next scene is in the bedroom door.
Well, he's got a chair up against the door handle to stop him from coming in.
And he pushes it open and he comes in. Boy, I know you're not asleep, boy.
Boy, wake up, boy. I know you can hear me, boy. I know you're not asleep.
No, I'm not. And he turns around and then you just get this, like, it's a really good shot, actually, isn't it? The lights are quite low.
Yeah.
And you can make out the kind of makeup that Monty's put on himself to make him look more effeminate.
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there on the bed trying to be seductive.
Yeah.
And then you've got this, I suppose it's almost like a bedroom farce, but where he's a predator. He's like chasing
it gets very
around the room.
Even more predatory. And at one point he proclaims, if you won't give it to me, I'll burgle it.
I mean to have you even if it's burglary.
Yes, that's it. It was quite an uncomfortable scene to watch.
I found it hilarious. I do, and I still find it hilarious to this day.
It was funny, but also uncomfortable, I think.
That's interesting that you found it uncomfortable. And I wonder if that's like a sign of the times, in the sense that you've just watched this film now, whereas I watched this film 20 years ago, where, for right or wrong, things were just different.
Yeah.
And so it was just hilarious.
Yeah.
I also had, I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast. You almost definitely shouldn't say this on the podcast.
Say it.
And I will say that, like, I'm not saying that what I'm about to say, okay, I'm just going to say it and then we'll take it from there. So when I was at college, we had a lecturer that very, very much reminded me. I did performing arts. We had a lecturer who very, very much reminded me of Uncle Monty, who was very kind of effeminate, very in your space.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he was a sexual predator, but certainly when we used to watch that film at college, and we would liken Monty to this tutor. He was a lovely guy, you know.
I'm sure he was.
But
So was Monty, but he didn't burgle but, from you, did he?
No, he didn't. See, this was the risk in me saying this. But no, so that's a classic scene. But and in the end, it forces. Oh, there's a really good shot in that scene as well. There's a moment when he's. Oh no, I think it's just before. Where I is kind of like, I don't know if he's making the bed or something, but his back's to Monty as Monty's kind of comes in and he just turns his head and it's like he's in a real vulnerable position, yeah. But it's a really good shot.
Well, I think as well, it's quite interesting. The way he gets out of this is by confessing his love for Withnail saying that they're homosexuals, but Withnail's too scared to come out of the closet. And I believed it. Yeah. I genuinely brought it. I thought this was the twist of the film. Yeah. I thought it was like, they are gay. That's why they're so dependent on one another.
Okay, that's interesting.
And then the next scene is obviously him being, what the fuck have you told Monty?
Yeah. There's a moment when he asserts himself where he starts to sort of say to Monty, stop it.
Yeah.
But then even then he still falls back on that, which is when he comes out with that excuse about Withnail. Yeah, but like you say, then the next scene is him waking him up. Wake up. Fuck, you know, and he's trying to get him. Going, we're leaving. We're leaving in the morning. And then what's been happening throughout this film as well between the two characters is... Actually, no, sorry, pulling it back. When he tells Monty that he can't sleep with him because he's in love with...
It's an undying love.
He's in love with Withnail and Withnail can't deal with it.
Yeah,
and he's
ashamed of it.
He's ashamed of it. Uncle Monty, which is, again, I think really good acting from Richard Griffiths, gets genuinely upset about it, doesn't he? It's like he's really moved by this. Yeah. That's what's really good about this film.
It's almost like this proud moment of his nephew, who he almost has this like fatherly connection with. I think he sees himself as a bit of a father figure. He's like, he's a homosexual as well.
And, I know his pain.
He's scared, yeah.
So in the morning, when they get up, Uncle Monty's gone.
Yeah.
And he left a little note. And again, I sort of feels for him.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, poor bastard. What's been happening throughout this film as well is that Withnail has been trying to get work. And he's been contacting his agent. His agent's not responding. He's getting really annoyed about it. Aya's had an audition and there's a chance that he may get this role. And then it turns out that he does get this role. Mm. And he's like, well, we need to go home.
Well, not so much with that. Withnail is getting offers, but he sees himself as below them. He's been told that he can be an understudy for an actor in a play. And he refuses to belittle himself to them roles. Whereas Aya is a bit more...
Well, we don't know what role it is. Either way, I gets a role and he takes a role and he's very happy about it. You can see on Withnail's face that he's going, congratulations, through he's gritted distraught. Teeth.
Yeah.
He's really envious about it. It's all the subtleties like that that I think has made me watch this film more than once, is that the characters are so real and there's so much going on beyond the script, which is great. There's great subtext in the script that I pick up more every time I watch it. Maybe not so much now after seeing it so many times, but certainly for many times. So he's been given the role, and then they decide they're going to go home. Well, because Withnail's distraught about it, really, so he gets very, very drunk. They start driving home. I has to stop because he can't drive and he has to go to sleep. And then, go on.
Withnail's in the middle of eating dinner when he says, we must leave and go backward. I think he wants to get back to sign on. I basically rushes him to the car. And there's quite an entertaining scene where Withnail's eating his dinner and from a plate.
In the car.
Going down the motorway.
Well, when he says to him, we need to leave now, he goes, well, you need at least an hour for lunch.
Yes.
And then the next scene is him in the car eating his meal. And then I gets tired and they pull over. And the next thing you know, they're waking up to Withnail driving the car absolutely drunk as a skunk.
Yeah, he's gone. He's had several bottles of wine.
I'm making up time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you hear the police sirens behind.
Yeah. There's a setup earlier on. There's their dealer.
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah,
what's his name again?
Danny.
Danny, their dealer. Basically, he's got multiple side hustles. He's trying to start up a new company where they'd all make dolls that shit themselves because of the girls love ones that piss themselves at the minute. Yeah. So if they make one that shits themselves, the little girls will love it.
Yeah.
And he's also tells them that he's in the bottle business and he's made this contraption that you fill with...
Yeah, unadulterated child's piss.
So that then you can strap a faucet, sellotape it to you at the end of your penis, and... When you're basically asked to provide a sample When you're pulled over, you use the faucet and swap out your piss for someone else's.
So with Dallas, presumably had this attached to him for the whole of the journey. I don't know when he put it on. The next scene is they're in the. He's been arrested and he's doing a pee sample and he's just.
Well,
falling.
When they pull him over, the whole thing is he's like, "I'm not drunk, officer. I'm not drunk.
I can assure you, officer. Yes, I've only had a few ales."
Yes. They get out. He's waiting for them to ask for him to piss in a tube,
early for
and they go. Puff into this three times and he goes, no, you're refusing, you'll be under arrest. No, you're under arrest.
So then they arrest him, take him to the police station, and then he tries the old pee bottle contraption unsuccessfully because he's basically too pissed to stand. So then they catch him and there's just this tube of like piss.
Yeah, it starts going everywhere.
The next scene is they return back home and Danny, the drug dealer, who, as you say, was seeded earlier, is in the house.
Has moved in.
They can
hear his friend,
presuming Ed. They hear music in the house. It's a George Harrison song.
Yeah, coming from the bathroom.
Gently weeps. They come in. They see this big black man in the bath, presuming Ed.
Yeah.
And then they go into the living room, and Danny's there. They're like, "Why the hell are you in the house? How have you got in?"
Shimmied up the drain pipes. Does he find out? I think he finds out here that he's got the role because he hasn't announced it to Whitney at this point.
No, he finds out earlier, and then when he's there, he gets another call, and it turns out that not only has he got a part, but they've given him the lead.
Yes, that's it. And he announces it.
Yeah.
And that's almost when he stands up for himself, isn't it, as well? After he gets that lead role, he stands up for himself, tells him to get out of his house.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
Then gets stoned.
Gets stoned.
And completely
and starts getting paranoid
really,
again.
Really paranoid. Which is a really, again, it's a great lesson in comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that thing you hear about comedy, is when you play comedy for real, it is so much more funny. And that's what's happening throughout this film, is that they're playing it like it's a drama. The whole film is played like a drama. Never are they playing anything for laughs.
There's a very absurd scene at the start where they need to wash the dishes. And Withnail basically says, right, I've had it, I'll go do it.
Yeah.
Because I is drinking coffee with a spoon from a bowl
because
they're out of mugs.
Yeah.
And I's obviously probably drank a bit. He's very paranoid. He's going, no, you mustn't. I think there's something living in there. There's something growing in there.
And matter.
It's so absurd. Yeah, there's a matter in there.
Where's it coming from?
Yeah. It's very absurd comedy, but it really works.
And then he puts his hand on the kettle and gets burned.
Yes.
And he goes, I told you, you've been bitten.
Yeah.
Burnt, the fucking kettle's on fire. But all of that is played very seriously. It's like they are just seriously, hopelessly trying to do the washing up and they can't do it. Everything is done very seriously. And so in this scene, when he gets stoned, it's very much, he's so innocent, when he's saying it, and he's like, you're getting absurdly high.
Yeah.
And then Danny starts talking about killing the rats. And drugging their onions.
Yeah,
and
he's like, you put it in the oven.
Why have you drugged their onions? I feel like there's other elements to this film than just this comedy about these two out-of-work actors. There's a sort of political thing amongst it as well, which especially is highlighted in this scene with Danny's little monologue.
I think there's another part as well about how the Tories were there and then the Labour...
Shat on by Tories, shoveled up by Labour.
Yes, that's it.
And also, I says, when Monty's saying to him, when he's trying to get him to have sex with him, he's going... Are you a sponge?
Do you like to experience new things in life? Or are you a stone?
And
you're a rock?
Yeah. And he goes, I voted conservative. Like that was like an experience.
Yeah, that answers it.
So there is an awareness of politics in it. And then towards the end, you've got this just totally gone, drugged out dealer who starts talking about... drugs when I panics and he's like really paranoid and he doesn't know what to do and he's begging Danny for a Valium.
Yeah.
He's like, give me a Valium. He's going, no, find your neutral space, calm down. Why trust one drug and not another?
Yeah.
That's politics. And it has this little monologue about the greatest decade, the 60s.
It's coming to an end.
And we failed to paint it black. They're going to be bringing out the dead and all this. Mm-hmm. He starts talking about, that peace, hope. That they had in the 60s didn't come to fruition.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because for two reasons. One, when they come up, While My Guitar Gently Weeps is playing, which is a Beatles song, and the Beatles kind of ended in 1969, 1970 as well. And that whole dream of peace and love. Also, George Harrison produced the film, which is quite...
That's interesting.
Interesting thing,
I think it's interesting as well that it was made in the 90s.
80s.
I'm thinking about when... I'm thinking about what we said before then. It was made in 87.
Yeah.
Okay. So also another end of a decade almost.
Well, and the Thatcher years. Mm. That's quite an interesting time to be making a film. That is a time when you can reflect on 1969 and see that things didn't quite go according to plan.
Yeah.
The 70s happened. The 80s came. This capitalist kind of way of life and greed and yuppies and all of this. And he's Bruce Robinson's writing it from that point.
Hmm.
Another element about it is it a love story?
Well, I think that it is a sort of rom-com in a way, I feel, between the two of them. They have this sort of dependent friendship. And towards the end, it is quite sad where I finally gets the job, fixes himself up, gets a haircut, looks like a completely different person. He's presumably moving out as well.
Moving on,
leaving Withnail behind.
That part of his life and is over, is how it feels.
Yeah, it's like I've grown up. And it feels like a breakup. It's very sad with Withnail telling him, I'll walk you to the station.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't want you to.
No. Withnail. And it's quite heartfelt.
I think, like I said, when he makes up the lighter Monty that they're both gay lovers, Withnail's closeted, I brought into that because it feels like it's been seeded the whole way along that there is something more here. They have got this love for each other. I think there's some truth in that lie that he makes.
Do you know what? I think probably the first time that I watched it, or the first couple of times, I don't think I would have picked up on that.
So I
think that's quite perceptive. But I definitely do now. I actually wonder almost whether because we don't see this scene, but the reason that Monty has gone to there is because Withnail has sold him a lie. He said, listen, we're going to go up there. If you want, you can come up there. He's gay as well. Come up and, you know, try your luck.
Yeah.
That is basically why Monty is there, because of what Withnail has said. And I thought, I wonder if, even though we don't see that soon, I wonder if that was, if there's a little bit of Withnail's fantasy in
that. I think as well, so much of it centres around this sort of homophobia where you have the guy in the bar that says, you smell what does he say? Perfume Ponce, he calls him.
Because he's thrown upon his
yeah,
shoes.
Yeah, he sprayed them with perfume to make it smell better because they can't afford to wash them. He goes to the bar to Withnail and almost like telling his older brother that the man over there is like, we need to leave. The man over there's called me a Ponce.
He goes to the toilet and he's having a piss, and you can see him just like with his gritted smile going, I could hardly piss straight with fear. Here was a man with
what did I do? I didn't do anything. He wants to hurt me.
I fuck horses. Who fucks horses? Maybe he fucks horses.
Yes.
Maybe he wrote this in a moment of drunken
sensitivity. Yeah, it's written in front of him. And I think then you have Withnail almost, who called you a Ponce? The man stands up. I called him a Ponce and you're a perfume Ponce as well.
Yeah.
And Withnail backs down because it's a manly guy. I think
I don't know what my... And he goes to say friend. And then you hear him say... I don't know what my acquaintance said.
I think their thoughts on Monty when they get there, like you say, he's a... What does... I calls him a... homosexual? What's he called?
Raving homosexual.
Raving homosexual. Yeah. I think so much of it centering around
rigorous
this.
Rigorous homosexual.
He is later on when he tries to burgle I.
burgle you.
Burgle I. Well, not me. No.
That joke's just, you know.
Yeah. Daft. You've done it about five times.
I've done it too many times.
And it's great. It was that was the best part. That was the best one so far. Yeah, I think the fact that so much of it is about them trying to prove that they're not gay. I think there is a part in there where it is, like you say, like a fantasy maybe of the two where they sort of are wed together. Like you said at the start, you described them as this sort of wed actors.
Kind of actors sort of forced together in this dour misery, you know, sort of wedded together, I guess. But I don't get the feeling that I is homosexual.
No, which is odd because I feel like he is... the character that is more in the 60s, you would have saw more traditionally as homosexual because of he's very empathetic, very polite, and sort of like a lot of the other characters that he's paired against are very like manly men, with the guy in the bar and him being quite scared of them.
Well, I mean, they're both actors. They're both sensitive. They're both effeminate to some degree. Sexuality in either of them in an explicit way doesn't really come into it. There's never any talk about anything. I mean, the only interaction with any women in it,
no
actually.
Women in it, apart from the
schoolgirls, when he shouts at the...
Scrubbers, he calls them, which I looked it up and it means like...
Little tarts, love it, he says,
That was quite uncomfortable. Then the next part after that, he starts talking about getting child's piss.
It was
a bit odd. Monty has a thing as well when he's introduced where he's asking if they like plants, if they like plants, and he says that he likes young carrots, which is interesting. I thought that was interesting, if maybe it's a metaphor.
Root
for
vegetables. Flowers are essentially tarts, prostitutes for
bees.
But the thing that ties up the love story, or the love aspect of it, I would say, is the monologue at the end, which is... interesting, because, I mean, I is the protagonist throughout, and then I goes off, and then you're left with, Naily's left with this monologue, which is this from Shakespeare. I don't know if you looked into
I presumed
that.
It was Shakespeare.
Okay, So, and the very, the last line of that monologue is, "Man delights not me, nor women neither, nor women neither," which to me just says, I mean, that to me says it all.
That's
how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there will be other people with different opinions on this. In fact, it would be really good for people, if anybody's got opinions, you know, go on our social media.
If you check the show notes, our Instagram will be there and you can follow us, messages.
On Instagram,
feedback,
on YouTube.
Suggestions for films.
Spotify.
Yeah, comment. Yeah. You can comment on Spotify now, comment on YouTube. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, we're available hopefully everywhere now.
Yeah. And as we are a relatively new podcast, we'll say relatively new, but like we're very new podcast.
As of recording, we've released one episode.
What are you talking about? It's New Year's Day.
New Year's Day. It's definitely not. It's not the 10th of December. We've not already splashed out a bunch of Christmas episodes December.
I've not just snaffled a mince pie.
No.
And you haven't had a gingerbread latte.
No.
Anyway, we're new. The podcast's new. If you've got any comments, please do on any of the podcast places. And subscribe.
Please subscribe. Follow us. Leave ratings. It helps.
Only if you like what you hear?
Yeah, if you don't.
Don't leave ratings?
No. Report us. If you don't like the show, report us to Spotify.
You don't want to be daring things like that, because
we'll probably get banned.
We might be near the knuckle on a couple of things. I don't know. But anyway, so... I will say one more thing. That my feeling about this is, I honestly think this is a contender for the best British comedy ever. That's my own view on it, obviously. The other one that I would put up there with it is probably Life of Brian, which I think is, you know, just an all-time classic. And what's interesting about both of those films...
Monty? both star Montys?
Is two things. One is that. And the other one is that they were both produced by Handmade Films, which was George Harrison's... film company.
Interesting.
That is interesting. But, you know, maybe you disagree. Maybe people listening, you know, have got a better idea of what the best ever British comedy is.
Let us know.
And we'll watch it and we'll review it.
Yeah. I think, comment what films you'd like us to look at. Yeah. I think if I come in with another British comedy then.
Yeah.
We'll do it like that.
Do it like that.
I'll bring in a more modern British comedy.
Yeah, so we should popcorn score it.
Can I just give my final thoughts on the film?
Please.
This was my first time watching it. I did enjoy it. Like you say, I thought it was a really good British comedy. I've never really seen Richard E. Grant in a comedic role, which I feel like he's known for. I think this is probably... I've never really known him for much. I've just known him as this sort of figure, as like an actor. I think this probably is where he got his name from, I imagine, this film. I thought it was very interesting. Like you say, very British humour. Of its time, I don't think it's aged badly, though.
Well, I mean, it's set in the 60s, so it feels like it's set in the 60s to me. That's what I'd say.
I feel like it felt very timeless. Like, you don't question it being set in the 60s. It doesn't feel like a film made in the 80s set in the 60s. It works.
Yeah. I think that's probably to do with the writing and the performances.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, for me, it is Richard Griffiths, Richard E. Grant, Paul McGann. Mm-hmm. I think it's their best work.
Yeah.
Of the things that I've seen.
Well, I feel like, I think we've had this conversation earlier on, about, I felt like the whole film for me was you I was rooting for Paul McGann's character Rai.
Yeah.
Just to get out of there, because I feel like he was stuck in that situation because he couldn't leave Whitnail behind, but he didn't want to move on. It's almost like he was addicted to that situation.
I think he was potentially an alcoholic with delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, I think they're really interesting characters. I really enjoyed it. I love the opening as well, that the paranoia, and it seeps all the way throughout the film. But I feel like it does paranoia really well in this.
Yeah,
dependency. I liked it. Yeah, really entertaining.
Cool. So, what would you let's popcorn score it then?
Yeah.
So what we do is, you give it a sweet popcorn, I give it a salty popcorn score out of 5, and then we stick them together for a sweet and salty
popcorn score.
Yeah.
Sweet and salty. Okay. So I'd say sweet score for me, I would give it it's hard. It's really hard to score it. I'm trying to think of what I've scored other films.
Well, is it better than Bone Alone?
I'm not going to give it a 0. I'm stuck between a 3 out of 5 and a 4 out of 5. I think I'm going to go halfway and sit on the fence with a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
So I really did enjoy it, but I personally think there's better British comedies out there.
Cool. And maybe we will review those at some point. I would give it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's one of your favourites. You've seen it about 50 times.
I think that the writing is really solid. I think the direction's solid. The performances are solid. There is so much in it, and it doesn't feel... It's strange because there's so many different aspects to it, but it doesn't feel confusing for that.
No. I think it's a very good example of a film that it doesn't really have a plot. It's entirely about the development of the characters, because there's no real reason that drives the story forward apart from them having to get away on a holiday.
Yeah, it's definitely character driven.
Yeah, entirely character driven. I thought the characters were fascinating. The performances were great. I think I struggle to buy into that world because of it's relatable in the sense of the paranoia for me. But I've not been a struggling actor. I know I said about the wine earlier, but I don't really drink.
Like, apart from the 2 bottles you drank.
Yeah, apart from them. I think that's maybe where I don't feel like I was necessarily the target audience for it.
Yeah, maybe. And I think, again, I'm going to say this, I think times have changed.
Yeah.
We do live in a different era. And when I first watched it, most people were drunk.
Yeah.
They just were.
Yeah.
You know, on Friday, Saturday night, at least, most people were drunk. And so me and my friends watched this film endlessly, getting drunk. And so I think that it's a world that I recognise.
And I think it's interesting because of this film highlights the difference between the films we watch and the difference in them, like the people that we are. I think it's a good film to show that.
Yeah, definitely.
But overall, I think the overall score of 8 out of 10, I think that's 10. A strong score and does it justice. I think,
We should be 10 out of 10. But yeah, I get it.
But yeah.
No, I think that's cool. I completely agree with you. I think it's good that, you know, that we're seeing films that show the differences between us.
Yeah, definitely.
So your film next?
Yeah, it'll be my pick next week. Yeah. I think I'll go for a British comedy.
Your favourite British comedy?
My favourite British comedy.
Oh, that'd be interesting if you did.
I don't know what my favourite is.
Better get thinking.
Yeah, I best.
I look forward to watching it.
Okay. I'll pick something that's just completely unfunny than I would. Yeah, we'll see about that. My favourite British comedy. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
To this week's episode of Film Apart. Happy New Year again.
Yeah, have a good one. I hope all your wishes come true.
Do people make wishes?
I don't know. No, you don't, do they? I hope whatever your resolutions are, you break them within the first week.
That was in my mind as well. Exactly in my mind as well. Don't bother making resolutions. They never work for anyone. Don't kid yourself.
What are you doing? And if you're going to make a resolution, make it in the middle of the year, not at the start of the year. Because you just, you know, what's the point?
Nah,
I don't know what you do in the middle of the year. I just thought I'd say that.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Peace.